Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Wednesday, December 8th. Welcome to Menace in the Morning. Myself and Chris Drew, my co-host every morning, Monday through Friday. Really cool to watch this show growth. We have grown, and so we launched this like 5 weeks ago, I think, the morning show, 4 or 5 weeks ago, and we've already doubled the audience in that 5 weeks. I think losing to Michigan helps is good for business in this entertainment mm-hmm. world, but certainly would rather you come listen to the show after wins for the Buckeyes. That would serve everyone better, I believe. But a lot to talk about, a lot to do. Quickly going to plug just our squares for charity. I think we have 14 squares left. Going to play in this college football playoff semifinals, the national championship, and the Rose Bowl. And so really excited about that. We already raised a ton of money for charity. We had our empty squares that no one bought hit for like almost $1,000 in the first four games. So get those squares, man. There's money being left on the table. I mean, that's all. It's great when it hits because that money goes into the charity. But we're trying to pay people out. So mm-hmm. let's fill this board. 14 left. Venmo Cameron Media or email me Zach@Menace2Sports, and we will fill that up for the Zone 6 fund we've been talking about. Also, kind of redoing our Patreon, trying to get some video content out to you. We're going to have probably next week, we'll start live streaming this show only for all-in subscribers on Patreon, the video of it. And then also got rid of my $2.99 listener tier. It was stupid idea. I apologize. give away half the show to the public, half behind a paywall. It's dumb. This is going to be a free show. We're going to put the entire show out to the public. This is kind of your way to support the show. If you enjoy the show and want to support the show, it's $5 a month. You get a custom RSS feed on your phone. That's the minimum tier. And then we're going to announce these other tiers and kind of rebuild and restructure Patreon so we can give you guys VIP kind of behind the scenes content. But we do have something we're going to do. Chris, we're going to give away a Menace Mystery Box, a little merch giveaway. We haven't decided what it is. It might be a hat, might be a t-shirt, might be a hat and a t-shirt, might be a sweatshirt. We don't know yet. Every Friday, we're going to give something away and we're going to pick a winner. If you go to iTunes or Spotify, leave a 5-star review and drop us a question for our Mailbag Fridays, we're going to pick a winner every week and send something out, a Menace Mystery Box. And it's just a great way for us to get feedback, get content for Friday's show, and to help us grow the show. So if you could do that, also share the show. Just hit the little button, copy link, text it to a group chat, whatever. If you hear something on the show you think's funny or great or good insight, tweet about it, tag us in it. We'll retweet it. Trying to make the show grow so you can help us mm-hmm. out.
Send us a screenshot of your review so we know how to reach out to you so we can pick a winner.
Absolutely. So once you review, DM us on Twitter mm-hmm. and send us that screenshot so that we know who it is when we pick you. And we'll get you some merch, get you some Menace gear running around town. But anyways, enough about that, Chris. There's a new sheriff, a new captain driving the Silver Bullets starting January 2nd, 2022. Jim Knowles from Oklahoma State has officially been announced and hired for the Buckeyes. Ryan Day making a gangster move.
From little OSU to big OSU. And it's a lot to unpack here because, you know, it's like the staff's already full. So we got to start with that and kind of unpack who Jim Knowles is. What kind of defense can we expect to see? Do we both like the move? I mean, this is big time and it happened. And maybe it doesn't happen if we beat Michigan. I'm not sure. But here we are, Zach, and it is officially speculation time. But from little OSU to big OSU, here comes Jimmy Jim.
Well, you know what's funny? It reminded me of a story that they told at Florida that happened. And I don't know if this is public knowledge or not, but Steve Spurrier is the head coach at Florida. Back then, you could only have 9 assistant coaches. Well, after the season, one season, his son was in the staff room, like that next staff meeting after the season. His son was sitting there, and he said, and he's runs a whole staff meeting. Everyone's kind of confused. Like, what the fuck is Steve Spurrier Jr. doing in here? And at the end of the staff meeting, kind of an afterthought, he goes, oh, well, I forgot to mention, elephant in the room. I'm going to hire my son. He's going to be an assistant coach. So NCAA says we can only have 9. We got 10. So if anyone wants to volunteer and find another job, I'll be in my office. And he walks out. And everyone's looking around like, what?
Sheesh.
Like, volunteer to get fired? What the fuck? This, like, bizarro land. And I wish I could remember what happened. I think he ended up firing someone, but he was expecting someone to walk in his office and volunteer. Like,
take one for the team? What the fuck?
Yeah, like Hunger Games style. Like I volunteer as tribute. Like, what? Who's going to do that? That's what it is, right? Like, you sit around the staff table, you got a Jimmy Knowles walking in, and everyone's looking around like, this is not legal, so who's about to get the can? But I did hear from a very reliable source that changes have been made. He's already let the coaches know who he's letting go, and that they essentially, it's what Urban Meyer did with Ed Warner and Tim Beck. I mean, he basically said, like, listen, we're going to make a change. I want to give you this bowl prep opportunity to go find another job, because you don't want to fire a guy, right? You fire a guy, it looks bad for him, looks bad for your program, for recruiting. Like, look, he had to fire all these coaches. Like, you'd much rather Kerry Combs, you know, leave for a job or Al Washington.
I'm not saying it's either. Yeah, just floating out.
Yeah, so then it's like, you know, or like Larry Johnson might retire, right? That could be on the table here. And I think Ryan just wants to get through the Rose Bowl and finish the season, let the seniors have some continuity, not fire a bunch of guys. And then you have some, like, a senior linebacker, like, I don't even have a coach now for my last game, like, whatever. So I think that's what's happening. And I think I expect some significant changes to be made, especially on the defensive side of the ball, because the one thing about it is, I don't think in the history of college football can you go hire a Broyles Award finalist like Jim Knowles, right? A guy that's so well respected, has such a dominant defense. It's almost unfathomable and impossible to believe that he will just come in by himself, right? Mm-hmm. And work with a staff of other coaches that Ryan just kind of places there. Like, he's going to want at least one guy that's his guy, right? One that knows his defense, two that knows how he runs a ship, right? How he runs a room, how he runs a defensive staff. He's going to want somebody to come in. So that's the next piece of this, right? We have to look at the Oklahoma State defensive staff, or it might not be someone from Oklahoma State, someone that he's going to bring in to kind of, I don't know about co-coordinate, but help him and be his guy. You can't just walk in a room with a bunch of strangers typically and run the show, especially. I mean,
that presents such a power struggle if he's in there alone with guys that have been there, kind of for the quote unquote dysfunctional defenses for the last couple of years. I mean, he's going to want his own set of eyes on it, his own fresh eyes, guys that he trusts. And it's not like he's a young guy; like, he's not an athlete; like, he's you know, seasoned and been around for a little bit. So he's earned every right to bring at least one, if not more than that, with him to Columbus, because the ultimate goal should be to fix the defense, and you can't be loyal to mediocrity. And honestly, that's what the defense has been lately.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question. I think it'll be interesting to see. I mean, the biggest thing about, so let's just talk about his defense. So I went and studied it yesterday and studied it a little more this morning. And this defense is kind of what the opposite of what we've watched at Ohio State. And it's really everything that you would want. And it's everything that I bitched about. They do what I bitched that we need to do, right? First of all, you look at the statistics and the analytics and the rankings. I mean, just ridiculous. The number one rushing defense, passing defense, scoring defense, third down defense in the Big 12, the most tackles for loss in America, 113. You talk about a disruptive defense. That is what this is. And the biggest differences I noticed between Ohio State's defense and Oklahoma State's defense is the Cowboys defense. They attack, they get off blocks. Their style is aggressive as shit. They're in your face man coverage a lot. They run a multiple front with a stand up rush end. That's what you're going to hear a lot about, right? Like we used to hear about with the bullet position with this old defense. All we're going to hear about now is this rush DN. People call it a number of different things. Leo, Jack, they'll have some stupid name for it, I'm sure.
It's just
a stand up rush DN, right? And they play mostly four down on first and second down. So don't listen to people that say they play an odd front. They don't. They play a similar front four as Ohio State does now. They just stand a guy up, right? And then they will do multiple things off of it. They will shift over into a three down front and let that guy walk behind the line and do some twist games out of it. Really, really cool and innovative stuff. And uh, they in the back end, they play a ton of man coverage, a ton of one high, a ton of zero coverage, honestly, with no help, whereas max all out blitzes, zero coverage. So we're going to have to play great man coverage off and press. And they play quarters. They play some two high halves. They play an inverted halves where like the safeties drop down and the corners are deep. They do a ton of stuff, and I love it. It's multiplicity. It's disguised. But the biggest thing is the aggression. That's the biggest thing I noticed. You cut on the Oklahoma game or the Baylor game, it is just like someone sitting back there with a gun shooting bullets at the ball carrier. And I mean, they're beating blocks, avoiding blocks, like knifing blocks.
Do they trigger?
They trigger hard as shit. And the biggest thing is they don't get blocked. I think that's the biggest thing about Ohio State's defense. You watch them down the stretch, they just get blocked a lot. Yeah. It's like they attach themselves to blocks. That this defense does not. It's the mentality is totally different. And it's going to be interesting it's going to be awesome to watch kind of some of these positions thrive, because this is a defense that had four all Big 12 players on defense. First team all Big 12, one all American, their linebacker, Malcolm Rodriguez. What a pleasant thing that will be, Chris, having dominant linebacker play.
Because we've had some dominant linebacker recruits, quote unquote, and then they come to Columbus and they suck, and then they get to the NFL and they're good. It's like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, like this rush end. The minute I started watching it, I'm like, holy shit. Can you imagine what Baron Browning would have done in that position? Or just
superior linebacker
in this defense. I mean, Baron Browning was a part-time player for Al Washington in this defensive structure that we had part-time. And now he starts for the Broncos, has 31 tackles, just playing out of his fucking mind in the NFL, but he wasn't good enough, or we weren't good enough as a coaching staff to get him on the field and accentuate his strengths. And that's when I watch this defense, that's what they do, right? Mm-hmm. That's what they do. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because this style of defense is very secondary centric, right? Like the corners and safeties have to be very well coached. They have to play impeccable technique. Man, when you play man coverage that much, and Ohio State fans know, I mean, you go back to 2014 and that defense with Chris Ash, it was a ton of man coverage. Like almost every snap was man coverage, which I disagree with, but it was. And so they had to be on their fucking game every snap. And it was stressful for the secondary. Now, this defense plays more zone than our 2014 defense. They do play some quarters. They do play some two high zones, like I mentioned. But it's just going to be interesting to see what they do with the staff then. Like, if I was to say, I would say Matt Barnes and Kerry Combs are out. Now, Matt Barnes is the one that I could see just getting demoted and being staying back on board.
Teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I think Barnes is involved with the defense. And then I think Kerry's out because, one, he's not going to want to get demoted, and two, I think that ship has sailed. My question mark is on Al Washington. I know Ryan. There's two ways to look at it, right? He's either going to let Al go, but they just gave him a huge bump in salary when he was going to go to Tennessee as the coordinator. And so I could also see Ryan saying, you know what, let me bring in a different coordinator to help get Al right? Get him, you know, elevate his game as a coach and help him develop, because Ryan and Al go back a long ways into Boston College. And they've known each other, worked with each other for a long time. And then Larry Johnson's the wild card. I mean, he's certainly not going to get forced out, certainly not going to get fired, but he could retire, right? That's the conversation. And I haven't really tried to investigate that one yet, but that's how I see it. I had a lot of people on social media talking about Parker Fleming needs to be fired. And I'm sitting here like, what? Parker Fleming is the special teams coordinator. Like, the special teams were good this year. Like, yeah, why would we fire him?
Yeah, I mean, I think they just felt like he wasn't, you know, qualified enough for a full-time, you know, coaching job. But I mean, obviously, I think the defensive room is going to get blown up, because this group has had 2 years to give it a go, and they've had explosive offenses both years, and the defense hasn't needed to be perfect, but it's needed to at least do its job. I mean, the things that we're missing from this season, Zach, is, first of all, I mean, generating virtually zero negative plays on first and second down. Opposing offenses were always, always, always on schedule, and then tackles for loss were something we really struggled with. So, you know, hitting some home runs on defense is going to go a long way if they can hit home runs on defense, because the offense is going to be so damn good, and it's not going to be the defense's job to carry the team. It's just going to be defense's job to do enough, you know, hit some home runs, get some extra possessions for the offense, because like this offense with extra possessions, that should be absolutely what you want. And really, as far as I'm concerned, get rid of the whole fucking defensive staff outside of Larry Johnson. Like I don't care about anybody else because I just want to win games. Nobody should be worried about hurting feelings at this point because it's about winning ball games. And next year's team, you know, this is the youngest team Ohio State's fielded. So next year they're gonna have a realistic shot at a national title. And you've got to get that defense fixed now because these windows don't open up very often.
You talk about just a recipe for success. And it's a lot like I talked about when Brian Hartline took over for me. And it's a great thing. Like, it's not a negative thing. It's not even talking negatively about a coach, right? Brian Hartline walked into fool's gold, like just absolute. I mean, you talk about the greatest situation ever, like three senior captain receivers, like the most loaded room ever. The recruits coming in, we're watching now, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Jameson Williams. I mean, he walked into just a gold mine of a room, which is great. It means I did my job. I set him up for success. And especially because, you know, Dwayne Haskins was going to be the quarterback and he was going to be able to throw it on time with accuracy, and these receivers were going to look open when JT Barrett was late and maybe inaccurate and they looked covered. So Brian Hartline got a fortunate situation. Same with Jim Knowles. He's going to walk into a defense that now is a veteran defense that played a whole year, had been through adversity. I mean, most of these guys are going to be back. I mean, you have guys like Tyleek Williams, Tylenol Williams, as I call him, Jack Sawyer, JTT. I mean, some of this young talent on this defense, and guys like Cody Simon will be better. And, then the back end, you're going to get Josh Proctor back from a season-ending injury.
That's big. Not enough people are talking about that.
So we're going to have a post safety now. And then you're going to have guys like Denzel Burke, Ryan Watts. You're going to have, they have some young talent at corner.
And yeah, I like Hancock and Jakalen Johnson. They're both going to be really good corners. And they better be because we're not going after Ricks.
No doubt. So it's, I think he's just set up for success. Never mind the fact that I love his style of defense. I think the stuff he does on defense is excellent. But even more than that, he's walking into an instantly improved defense just because of everything I just said. Everyone's a year older. You lose minimally. Like, you lose Cam Brown, probably going to lose Zach Harrison. Haskell Garrett will be a big loss. And Tyreek Smith was good, not great, just good. So I think the talent at defensive end, it's going to be a wash. Zach Harrison underperformed his whole career if he decides to leave. And I think Cameron Brown's the one loss you have, but they have young talent at corner, and they're going to get their predator back. They're going to get their free safety that is a fucking eraser. And I think he would have been an All-American type of player this year if he didn't get hurt.
No, I 100% agree. I do have my concerns about Zach Harrison. He's just not good enough. Like I nothing against the kid, Zach, but he's just not good enough. And I hope that he can put together a hell of a season, but I almost want to see him at a different position. I mean, if he can gain a lot more weight and just kick inside every now and again, because I don't think, JTT and Jack Sawyer are going to come off the field very often next year. So I think they're both going to be players.
I think they're both going to be really good. I think Jack Sawyer is a body type and a skill set that is absolutely perfect for the stand-up rush end they use. I mean, that guy, he's going to be, I think he'll have a breakout year. His sophomore year is going to be a breakout year, and you're going to see, you know, it's just going to see a much improved team.
Yeah. Double-digit sacks from Jack Sawyer next year. Call it now.
Absolutely. We'll call
it. Let's go. So you called this the ultimate chess move in our show prep, hiring Knowles.
It is. I mean, not only because of what I just studied on defense, and I think this guy's one of the best defensive coordinators in college football, and I love everything he does, but it's also gangster that this guy's going to spend a month prepping for Notre Dame, and then he'll officially get hired at Ohio State, and instantly the next game he preps for is the opening weekend in the Horseshoe against Notre Dame. So he will have game planned against Notre Dame twice with different players, different personnel. Like, he will know exactly what Notre Dame wants to do, what Tommy Rees wants to do, and how Tommy Rees will want to attack his defense. And then he'll get to come to Ohio State, kind of adjust his scheme for the players, because that's, you always have to do that. You can't just come in and say, here's the defense. If you don't fit, you're out. Like, you got to adjust your scheme and what you do for the personnel you have. So he's going to have wrinkles and adjustments going into that first game after spring ball and summer and everything. And he's going to get to attack Notre Dame's offense again with, you know, a different pitcher on the mound, essentially.
Yep. Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm excited for this. I do have a question, though, recruiting question. Is he allowed to start making calls to Ohio State kids now about recruiting?
Not until he's hired.
Okay. So I guess, you know, that kind of hurts a little bit, the dynamic with, I mean, kids are going to have to kind of turn on Oklahoma State and trust, because we do have, you know, obviously a safety looking to commit here pretty soon, just with the early signing period. It does make the timing pretty weird. I'm not sure how much it hurts recruiting. I know DCs and OCs do a lot of recruiting, but a lot of times it's position coaches that kind of take the bulk of it, and it's their job to stock the cabinets. And the cabinets are actually pretty stocked right now, as is. So I am really interested. All right, but so he's not allowed to recruit until January. I think that's
really right. And the interesting dynamic will be what do those coaches do? The ones that have been, I mean, you would imagine they would handle themselves like professionals, but the ones that Ryan has told, like, you're not going to come back next year. Like, how involved are they in recruiting, and how much does that hurt recruiting? Because if I'm Kerry Combs and I got fired essentially, or told that I'm not going to be coming back, like, am I really going to recruit that hard? Like, for what? Like, I don't have this job anymore. I'm not recruiting players that I'm going to coach. And the second part of that is, does Ryan want a coach that's being let go to be talking to recruits? Because you don't know exactly what they're saying.
And is this kind of the point of recruiting where the head coach takes a lot more? Like, I know Urban Meyer sometimes would get more involved, at least looked more involved in the recruiting when there were some changes going to happen. So I would think, I hope to expect the same from Ryan Day. But I do hope we can keep Kerry Combs, man. I think he's a great teacher. Not sure how he is as a DC, but that's a big ego for a football coach taking a demotion publicly.
I said it when he finally spoke to the media after being demoted and gave that perspective onto who he is as a human being. I said, Kerry Combs is an asset for a staff. I don't think he's obviously not a great coordinator. I think he's a good football coach. I don't even think he's a great football coach when it comes to teaching technique or scheme or anything like that, but he's extremely valuable to a staff and to a team.
To culture, like Kerry Combs is a culture. Pure culture guy.
I do think Kerry has value. I just don't know if he has the humility to take a much lesser role after his career trajectory went the way it went, right? He went to the NFL, was a secondary coach, came back as a coordinator. Like, he was stepping up. Will he really take two steps back in his career, on his resume, just to stay at Ohio State? I don't know that. And it probably mostly, if that's even an option for him, it'll mostly be based on what other opportunities are out there that he can get, right? Because it's easy to say, no, he won't take that. He wants to be a coordinator. It's like, all right, well, who's hiring him to be the coordinator right now? Where's he going?
How often do coaches ask to take a pay cut? Because that's kind of been floated around, like reduced role, reduced salary.
It happens at times with a demotion, but it's a hard thing to do. I mean, you pay a guy $800,000 and then you demote him and say, all right, we're going to cut you to $5 million. He's like, what? Like, I'm already making $8 million.
Yeah.
Like, why? You know, like, most of the time it doesn't happen very often. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, I just, had a couple questions on that, that is interesting. The rest of this week, I think we're looking, when do you want to start, breaking down this Utah game? Cause I'm ready when you are.
Yeah. I think we could talk about it maybe next week. There's so much time and bowl prep. You kind of think about bowl prep. I kind of approach it the way that coaches approach it in bowl prep. Like, there's really like three phases of bowl prep, right? The first phase is what they're in right now, which is basically just like rest, like get your body back,
get your legs back
a couple times just to stay in shape and stay sharp, timing in the pass game, stuff like that. A lot of coordinator practices because coaches are on the road recruiting, trying to finalize this class. So they'll have practices where it's just the offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator there, and then all the interns and GAs and analysts. So it's a very laid back time. A lot of times guys, like, you'll do one-on-ones wide receiver DB and a receiver will jump over and play corner every now and then. Like, it's fun practices. It's a blast. Some of the most fun practices you have because it's just so chill. And all you're trying to do is stay in shape and throw the ball around, keep your timing and just stay sharp. And then you get into kind of that, all right, back to bowl prep. We're going to get back to practicing, right? Get back to hitting, tackling, all that stuff. That second phase. And then the third phase is really game planning. And it starts about a week and a half, maybe, 10 days before the game, where you really implement your plan, right? You studied them for 2.5 weeks. And now you're like, all right, here's our plan. We're going to get the players going on it a little earlier than a normal game. And then you prep. So that's how I kind of approach the show. Like, this is like, this is chill mode. Like, we're just
early phase.
Yeah, we'll talk football, we'll talk awards, we'll talk about the season, talk about, the landscape, and then we'll slowly get into kind of some matchups to the point where then that game week, after Christmas, it's time to analyze all these games because the playoffs start New Year's Eve. I believe the Rose Bowl is the first, right? January 1st. So we'll get to it after Christmas, kind of the intense breakdowns of these games, but it's always good to talk about it, especially with a lot of these changes being made in the coaching carousel.
Right. You put on here, let this sink in, no Ohio State linebackers on any of the Big Ten teams. That cannot happen at Ohio State.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. The way they've recruited, you mean to tell me they didn't have a single linebacker that is amongst what the top 12 linebackers? Because there's three on a team and three on a team, three teams or four teams. I saw there was a fourth team. There's no linebackers on any of the all Big Ten teams. I think I saw Taraja Mitchell was like an honorable mention fourth teamer, which I don't even get. But just unfortunate. I mean, it's just not the level of play you expect out of the Silver Bullets. And then you go to the All-American team, and there is one Buckeye on the All-American team. My man Noah Ruggles, tuggle my balls, plant his ass a tree in Buckeye Grove. My man is an All-American.
Congrats to Noah, man. It was stone cold all year. I think he only missed a one. Yep. But, you know, no nerve-wracking handshakers. So congrats to him. Hopefully we get more next year. Zach, I don't have anything else for today. So
I just want to run through this All-American team before we get out of here.
Hell yeah.
Kind of who I think is deserving. I mean, Bryce Young was obviously the quarterback that is an All-American. That's absolutely deserved. Best quarterback in the country. Kenneth Walker III. Absolutely the best running back in college football. I don't know much about the kid from Oregon. I mean, not Oregon, Jesus. Syracuse, Christ. Mm-hmm. Sean Tucker from Syracuse. I don't know much about him, but his stats look great. Then the receivers were problematic for me. I mean, Jordan Addison at Pitt is a good player, but he was really a product of just getting the ball thrown to him 100 times.
Kenny Pickett would close his eyes and say, fuck it, buddy's over there somewhere.
There's no doubt. And same with David Bell at Purdue. I mean, I think David Bell's a great player, but is he the best receiver in the country? I think for Chris Olave or Garrett Wilson not to be on this list. And then Jameson Williams was all purpose, which I guess is because he's a returner, but he's the best receiver in the country. He's going to win the Blitnikoff. That's just absurd. Now, the guy that I talked about a ton on my show yesterday, who is probably going to be the Menace Mackey Award winner. And we got to name the awards, by the way.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I'm going back and forth with my Menace subscribers. We have a Menace tier where we have a group chat and just trying to figure out how to name it. They had some great ideas, like name it like some random player that no one's ever heard of, or name it after, you know, a player that I've coached or a player that I've been around, or name it after like just a great Buckeye at each position, whatever. We're just conversating about what to name it. But Brock Bowers at Georgia, a freshman tight end, was just, I mean, stupid this year. Ridiculous. I mean, led Georgia in receiving and just was outstanding. And then you go to the offensive line. You know, you have the tackle from Bama, Evan Neal, Zion Johnson from Boston College, a Steve Adazio recruit, the best center in college football, probably the Remington Award winner is Tyler Lindenbaum at Iowa. Then you got a guard from Texas A&M, a tackle from Mississippi State, and then Jameson Williams, all-purpose. Then you go to the defensive side of the ball. Aiden Hutchinson, well-deserved DN. Jordan mm-hmm. Davis, stud. Jermaine Johnson from Florida State, the other DN. So just, again, just crazy that, well, one, it's crazy how they do this. Like, why there's not two D tackles, I don't know. But two DNs, and then Will Anderson Jr. is the best player in college football. Nakobe Dean is an absolute stud, the linebacker from Georgia. Devin Lloyd from Utah, great player. And then the guy we talked about, right? Jim Knowles, linebacker, stud linebacker, Malcolm Rodriguez,
yeah,
is on the list. Ahmad Gardner from Cincinnati, the corner, is going to be fun to watch him in the playoffs. A corner from Auburn, Roger McCreary. Verone McKinley III, the safety from Oregon. And then Jalen, I don't even know how to say it, Petrie from Baylor.
Sounds good to me.
San Diego State's punter. And then Noah Ruggles, tuggle my balls.
Good old Noah. I love it. I can't wait to see. Do you think Buddy from Cincinnati, is he a man guy? Like, are we going to see him matched up with Jameson Williams for the long haul?
I mean, that's a recipe for disaster. But you know what? That means they have a bullet, right? Mm-hmm. You go into a war against Alabama and their best player is their receiver and their quarterback. I mean, you need to have ammo to try to stop that. I'm not here to say he can stop him or can cover him consistently. But boy, you talk about a test. Here we go, big boy. You're an All-American at Cincinnati. You haven't had to cover shit. Notre Dame doesn't have any wideouts. Indiana doesn't have any wideouts. You haven't had to cover a fucking dog yet all year. So it's time to find out. Put up or shut up. Show me that All-American tape, big boy. Go cover the Blitnikoff Award winner and the fastest man in college football. Let's see it.
And wide receiver one on just about every draft board.
Oh, absolutely. So absolutely.
That's some NFL tape, man. Go make your money.
Hey, you want to be a high first round pick? Mm-hmm. Go lock up Jameson Williams. You'll do two things if you do that. One, you'll make yourself a lot of money. And two, you will get Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson more money because they'll move right up the board.
You will get everybody paid if he will get everybody paid. He's got a big chance. The whole hood's on his back now.
Or he's going to solidify Jameson Williams as a top 15 pick, realistically.
and Jameson Williams is going to make even more money.
Right. But that is yet to be seen. But anyways, that's all we got for today. We will be back tomorrow to talk some Heisman Trophy stuff and just some, you know, general conversation about college football. But like we said, if you want to win a Menace mystery box, go on iTunes or Spotify, leave us 5 stars and a question for Friday's mailbag, screenshot it, DM us on Twitter. We will pick a winner on Friday, get that in the mail, get some merch, get some Menace gear floating around this country. And also Patreon, $5 a month, get your RSS feed, support the show, and buy a square, support the kids of Columbus City Schools as we grow this Zone 6 fun. So appreciate y'all. Menace out.
Menace out.
Menace Nation, it's Menace morning time.
Wake 'em up. I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on egg today.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma put up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial. Pray the Lord I beat the case. That man be